The reading today is by Chaplain Jeff Davis. He writes, "In the quiet stillness of a cocoon, hidden from the world's gaze, a caterpillar undergoes one of nature's most awe-inspiring transformations. What once crawled on leaves will one day take flight, adorned in the brilliance of wings. This metamorphosis is not instant. It's a vulnerable, unseen, and sometimes painful process, one that mirrors the spiritual journey. When a caterpillar enters the chrysalis, it surrenders its form entirely. Inside that cocoon, it doesn't merely sprout wings. It dissolves. Its entire structure breaks down into a kind of biological soup, becoming unrecognizable. It's messy. It's quiet. And it's necessary. The transformation is so complete that if the cocoon is opened too soon, what's inside cannot survive. This is the sacred process of becoming." This pause can look like a season of waiting, obscurity, or stillness. It may feel like loss, confusion, or even the end of something we cherished. Just like the caterpillar doesn't understand why it must stop moving and be enclosed, we too wrestle with seasons where we feel hidden or hurt or put on hold. The caterpillar must break down before it can be built anew. Inside the chrysalis, it essentially ceases to be a caterpillar. Transformation isn't just a slight improvement, it's a complete renewal. That process often requires the breaking down for us of old thoughts, habits, and heart postures. In these moments, we are stripped of what no longer serves us. We may feel undone, but the deconstruction is necessary. We emerge not when we're ready, but when we're transformed. The chrysalis breaks open not from outside pressure, but from inner strength. We emerge not better, but different. Thank you for inviting me back. Thank you to those who asked me to continue this series called The Long Dark. You are very brave. I know it's not an easy topic, but I speak with so many people who share with me their fears and hopes for the future. And I believe that even those who don't want to talk about it, who feel overwhelmed like I do sometimes, still feel the effects of these unsettled and unsettling times. When I first came up with the idea for this series, I had the themes of each sermon pretty well mapped out in my mind. Funny thing about that, though, it turns out that as much as I talk about the need for clear sight in these hard times, waiting for emergent solutions rather than laying answers on top of problems we can't really fathom, that's just what I was doing. I love to come up with answers and then tell people the obvious solutions. We all do, in our own way. Our nervous systems like stability. So how do we walk through the desolating landscape of this current culture with equipoise? Lord willing, I'm going to steer away from the one-size-fits-all answer to this question, but here's what I've been contemplating and practicing in this moment. And I'm also really, really interested in what you've come up with as well, what strategies work for you. Because it feels like we're living in a liminal moment, a betwixt and between time. We know too much about how we are complicit in destroying the atmosphere, forests, and oceans. We may be allowing ourselves glimpses of how deeply we are entangled in this unjust culture. We can't unknow this. And our efforts feel so small in the face of the current crises. So the image I carry in my heart for this liminal time is a giant chrysalis. As you heard, in a chrysalis, the cells break down and reorganize into new structures. There's a complete transformation that requires time. In the chrysalis, we are neither caterpillar nor moth. We are in the goo, so to speak. And in the goo is not a comfortable place to be. Others use much more elegant language. The one I like best is by a man named Dogald Hine, who calls this time the deconstructive phase of wisdom development. The deconstructive phase of wisdom development. So what do we need to deconstruct? On the outside, we can look to ways to disentangle ourselves as much as possible from the current paradigm of extraction of resources, both geologic and human. But I don't think we gain any long-term change by fighting the dominant power over structure from that same structure, the structure that tries to keep us in our own individual silo of isolated need, instead of creating a global community, making decisions that work for us all, and not just satisfying our personal preference. To do this, I believe we need to take advantage of this deconstructive phase. We need to descend into the goo willingly in order to allow both personal and cultural transformation to take place. We need to be willing to wake up to our predicament and internalize a way forward, making personal transformations first in order for external change to become possible. It's an inside job, as they say. So today, without any easy answers, I want to explore with you how we might envision the future we want to see, we want to live in. Make conscious what is unconsciously holding us back from that vision by seeking guidance of divine intelligence. I'm only able to scratch the surface of these ideas today, but I'm hoping we'll continue to play in these fields together for a long time. So first, imagining a better world. All three of these ideas have been part of my spiritual practice for a while now. And I thought that visualizing the world I want to live in would be the easiest, right? But for me, it's not. I'm so surprised. When I try, I get to concepts like world peace, people being kind and compassionate, looking to a world that puts social care over personal profit. But it turns out that conceptual or imaginary aren't the same as imaginal. Imaginal specifically references the result of metamorphosis. For instance, imaginal cells are cells that carry the blueprint of the butterfly within the caterpillar. It implies a radical structural change rather than just getting older. So I use the word imaginal to assure myself that we have the ability to fundamentally transform into a new way of being. We do. But to get anywhere, we need to know where we want to go. It may not be all highway, we may get lost, but we really need to see things the way we want them to be. Feel them being real now, inside, in order to sustain ourselves on this journey. This is important because seeing, visioning, imagining is not passive. It's subjective and creative. This is a fundamental tenet of UU. We are co-creators of the world with spirit or the divine that lives in each of us. We are not only being shaped by and reacting to the world in which we live, we are constantly co-creating and shaping our world with every thought, feeling, and action. Take a moment, if you are willing, to truly see the world you want to live in. Close your eyes, if you want, and imagine yourself waking up into a just world, sharing labor, caring for children, playing together. A world where our interconnectedness is so deeply ingrained in our nervous systems that repairing our relationship with the earth, with each other, and with ourselves becomes intuitively obvious. Where the narrative we give our lives and the stories we tell others cultivate communities of belonging that are strong, resilient, and joyful. What does that world look like to you? How does it feel? Can you get a bodily sense of what it would be like for your work, your family dynamics, for your nervous system to swim in the river of this new world? This is how transformation begins. Thank you. You can open your eyes or not, up to you. The second suggestion, making conscious what is unconsciously holding us back, is really about that cellular reorganization that happens in the chrysalis, in the goo. Andrea Gibson, a poet, actually, who recently passed a few years ago from Calais, Maine, wrote, "What part of your life's record is skipping? What wound is on repeat? Have you done everything you can to break out of that groove?" So I invite each of us once again to look within just for a moment, if you so choose, and see if you can uncover one part of your life's record that is skipping. One wound on repeat. What comes up to me, for me today first is, I have to do it myself, nobody's going to help. That's been on repeat for I cannot tell you how many decades now, but it can be something as simple as that. But I tell you, if you're in an emotionally intimate relationship, I can pretty much guarantee that something will emerge at some point that's on repeat. I can't believe she did it again. Living in community, as I do, is another great way to discover what you think you've hidden from sight, because I have a calm exterior, but which actually oozes out sideways for everybody to see but myself. When we find something like anger or hurt or judgment, can we begin to meet it with curiosity and respect and acceptance, rather than pushing it aside, making it underground again? It's so boring on repeat. But if we bring it to the surface, once we recognize an unconscious pattern in our lives, we begin to change that long-held conditioned response. Just by noticing, that's all you have to do. When the pattern becomes conscious, we begin to heal. We can't help to see it, but ripple through every aspect of our lives. In families where cast-off members are welcomed back, in communities that integrate rather than exile their differences, in movements that gather together rather than perpetuate division. And on a larger scale, when we allow, welcome, and fully feel the emotions stuck in our unconscious programming, we are identifying the ways we perpetuate our dominant culture's paradigm. It's a hard thing to look at. But then we can also clearly see our role in creating the world in which we want to live. And in light of day, these previously unconscious parts resolve. This work changes the world, not just ourselves, by creating more ease in all relationships, which is one quality of the new world of my imagining, ease of relationship. But what makes truly imagining the world we want to live in more than just a mind game? What makes uncovering unconscious patterns more than psychological homework? For me, and funny that what came up for me, my conditioned response was I have to do it myself, because for me, it's the realization time and time and time again that I cannot do it myself. I need teachers, I need mentors, I need guidance that comes from cultivating a relationship with the divine intelligence of life itself. I'm truly not advocating for any particular way to seek guidance. I'm highlighting the need to be in personal relationship with something larger than ourselves. Call it source, beloved God, goddess, mother, father, ancestors, protectors, guardians. We need mystery to be a part of the conversation of this new world. I don't think we'll be able to evolve as a civilization to get out of this chrysalis, out of the goo, without guidance from something more than human. Unless I start with, I can't do it myself. It's so easy for my separate self to imagine I can go it alone. And it can be something so simple. Oh, I can take that too heavy box out of the back of the car, no problem. It can start there. And I'm not saying God will take care of this, I'm off the hook either. It's trust in the chrysalis. It's the time it takes to stop looking for quick fixes, to allow the fear, let go of the known, and enter the goo, the mystery. Deschardins wrote, by means of all created things, the divine assails us, penetrates us, and molds us. We imagined it as distant and inaccessible, when in fact we live steeped in its burning layers. The way forward is not a well-worn path. Each step we take emerges out of the step before. The whole field creates each step on the way. It's up to us to be both receptive to the field and consciously contribute to it. So may we leave here today not with answers, but with the courage to descend into the chrysalis to ask hard questions. May we meet ourselves in the gooey, unformed, sacred middle with gentleness and fierce compassion. And may we trust that even in these darkest times, even at the edge of the cliff, grace is already and always reaching out to us. May it be so, and amen.